From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour will be made this Saturday and Sunday. It's another NFL playoff weekend, and the league is set to make tens of millions of dollars. All the games, of course, sold out. They will get huge television ratings. And on the outside, everything looks like things are humming for the NFL. But behind the scenes, there remain questions about how the league and how some individual teams have handled employment cases. Buffalo, in particular, is at the center of that question with the Buffalo Jills cheerleading lawsuit. We're also looking at questions of the Bills head coach's contract, the way the NFL handled the Ray Rice case. And from an outsider's perspective, it just looks like a what-not-to-do situation. So this hour, we're going to find out from some legal experts on whether the NFL has made some serious missteps, what we all can learn from it, and where they go next. In a moment, we're going to hear from the attorney representing some of the Buffalo Jills in their lawsuit. But first, I want to welcome Beth Cordello, who is a member of the law firm Polano & Farrow in Rochester. She's chair of the Employment Practice Group there. Beth, thanks for being here. Well, and Beth, when it comes to, again, that outsider perspective, you are an employment practice attorney. You've seen these kind of cases for years. I don't handle these cases internally, but from the outsider's perspective, I think, boy, the league looks like they've made some serious mistakes this year. Am I wrong?
You're absolutely right, Evan. And you, in the way you said it was correct. It's a play-by-play of what not to do when handling wage disputes and employee misconduct.
When it comes to the Buffalo Jills, this is a case where the league already has problems, I think, with women's issues. They had issues with the Ray Rice case, Janae Rice, and there were obviously questions about penalties for players in terms of domestic violence. And then you get this case where cheerleaders are alleging, and there seems to be evidence, that they were paid less than minimum wage in a league that's making tens upon hundreds of millions of dollars. And it just doesn't look like good timing to me, Beth. I mean, if you're advising the league, could you ever believe that a team could get away, or a league or whoever is paying the Jills could get away with paying them less than minimum wage?
Absolutely not. And in the case of the Bills, they're paying them zero. They get a pass for their parking, and they get a ticket into the game, but they buy their own uniforms, and they make nothing. And it's unbelievable because in their own right, they are athletes and performers. And outside of the NFL industry, you just wouldn't see this. But because it's industry-wide that this particular group does not get paid minimum wage and sometimes nothing at all for the opportunity to be a cheerleader.
Opportunity, the privilege, apparently,
yes.
Right? I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing that a league that is making the money they are, and I understand Buffalo's not a big market team. They're doing fine. But before we get to the interview with the attorney representing the Jills, help me understand something here, Beth. The Bills have been claiming they don't really employ the cheerleaders.
Right.
They're contracting that out?
They contracted that out to a former Bills cheerleader who has set up a company, and I think she herself has even said they exercise such control over that operation.
The Bills do,
that it's a sham to distance themselves from exactly this type of liability.
So before, again, we hear that interview, you are both an attorney who handles cases like these, but you're also someone who's written passionately about making sure, you're a feminist, I think, is fair to
say. Absolutely.
Okay, all right. We've had some fun in the last year about trying to understand what that term actually means, but you're someone, I know these issues matter to you. Do you see it from two different lenses for that reason, that the way the league has handled cases like Ray Rice, the Bills handling cheerleaders being told to do demeaning things? They've got to go to corporate outings, and one of the prizes, if you bid enough, is one of the Buffalo Jills is going to come sit on your golf cart and maybe sit on your lap as you ride around the golf course. I mean, that's to me, it's demeaning and objectifying.
Well, and it's a shame, too, because the cheerleader franchise could be marketed in such a way that would be respectful to them and generate income from the NFL. And as I understand it, they also have to do jiggle tests for physical fitness. I doubt any male employee of the NFL has had to do that. And at a time when they're trying to court more female fans and, you know, just more females buying into the NFL apparel and the games and so forth, there's a lot to be done to bridge that gap.
She used the term jiggle test, which is, I mean, that's actually apparently what the Jills have been told it is. They're supposed to, they're looking for body fat. I mean, it's just, again, it's so demeaning to me. But this hour, we're going to be answering some questions about what employers can learn generally. And then there are some very specific parts of this case that I'm eager to get Beth Cardello's opinion on. But first, let's listen to my conversation with Sean Cooney. He is an attorney representing the Buffalo Jills in this case. And again, they're alleging wage theft. They're alleging that they've been working, and they have, and they've been paid less than minimum wage. And obviously, you're not supposed to do that. And that case is not settled yet. I wanted to talk to Sean Cooney, their attorney, about what happens next. And I started with the question, is it even realistic that the Buffalo Bills could claim that they're not the ones employing these women? Let's listen.
We've had a motion to dismiss filed by the Buffalo Bills in this case already that the court denied. And in that decision, the court specifically referenced the minute control that the Bills exercised over the cheerleading squad. That level of control, I think, is so great that the idea that they subcontracted out the cheerleading services in order to insulate themselves from any wage theft case that would eventually arise, I think the motivation is pretty clear from my perspective of why they would do that. And the control is so strong that we're going to get through the discovery, we're going to continue to litigate the case, but the control by the Bills exercise is so great that I'm very optimistic that the court's ruling is going to stand once we get to the summary judgment phase.
With the arrival of the Pegula family owning the team now, has the tenor of this case changed at all?
No. No, we've specifically requested a mediation, which is how the case in Oakland resolved with the Oakland Raiderettes. And that proposal was accepted by the other defendants in the case, but the Bills, even after the ownership change, have rejected our proposal to sit down and talk about putting this chapter of wage theft behind them.
When it comes to what these women were paid, some of them were paid, according to the New York Times and according to the case from what we've seen so far, we're talking remarkably low hourly rates for the amount of work versus the amount of pay. Can you talk a little bit about some of those specifics?
I can. It's essentially zero. There are some paid appearances that are divided up by seniority and availability, but they amount to maybe $100 for one cheerleader, a couple hundred dollars for another, a few hundred for another. And we're talking about hours and hours and hours of work throughout the year. 10 home games, mandatory unpaid sponsorship appearances, running Junior Jills cheerleading programs, all of these hours, hours and hours, hundreds of hours unpaid. That's not counting the cost of the operation that were transferred onto the workers, the cost of uniforms, the cost of travel, hair, makeup, boots, earrings, you know, other things that they would wear were all passed down to them. So not only were they not paid, they also had to incur some of the costs, including some of the calendar sales that they had to make. The cheerleaders were required to prepay to the Bills contractor $100 for these calendars every month. And if they sold them at $10 a piece, great, they got their money back. If they didn't sell them, they weren't refunded the money by the Bills contractor. They were just out the $100.
What were the Jills told going into this process? You know, when they got the job, what was their understanding for what they would have been paid?
In New York State, we have a minimum wage statute, and you cannot modify a statute in it with an employment contract. That's the whole point of the minimum wage law, is that no matter what you're told or what the employer wants to do, you have to be paid a minimum wage. And the legislature has enacted that law to promote the well-being and overall public benefit of some minimum wage. And there's been lots of discussion about whether that minimum wage is even adequate, but that statute provides that it must be paid regardless of what you're told. But to answer your question, the Bills had their contractors have an agreement available for the cheerleaders to sign. We think that agreement is unenforceable and illegal because it does just that. It modifies the minimum wage statute and says that they may be paid some money, but you're not allowed to complain about it. And even if you're not an independent contractor, you're a volunteer, it's very vague in terms of what it says they would be paid. And then we know from practice that they actually weren't paid anything in any meaningful compensation.
Is it common in other organizations, other employment structures, for employees to have to purchase their own uniforms or pay for their own travel to work events?
You know, I don't know the numbers in terms of, you know, how prevalent that is. You know, it certainly may come up from time to time. I would think that when in an employment context where the employer is complying with labor laws, that there is some compensation, and hopefully enough that if there are those type of costs that the employee has to incur, that they're making enough money that it's factored in. But in our case, they're not being paid any money, so this is just additional debt on top of working for no wages.
Right. In other words, from the outside, you're going to win the public opinion on that one, because when the public hears that the Buffalo Jills had to pay their own way to travel or to buy their own uniforms or to pay for part of the cost of creating these calendars for a team that brings in hundreds of millions of dollars and for a league that brings in billions, some people are going to be appalled at that. But again, that's not even necessarily the legal core of the case, I understand it. And then there's the other question I have when it comes to some of these events outside of games. Sean, you know, the New York Times focused a bit, and a lot of the media has focused on some of these events that seemed, for lack of a better term, just a little off, a little creepy. I mean, making these women parade around or sit on men's laps on golf carts, being bid over in ways that were very objectifying. But at the same time, I'm not sure that's part of your legal suit, is it?
Well, our case is about wage theft. And in order to show that, we have to prove that the Bills and their contractors treated these women like employees. And that comes down to the level of control that they exercise over these workers. And when you look at the different things they had to do and the different things that they were specifically instructed on, the level of control becomes, I think, greater than you find in virtually any employment context. You don't see that type of instruction that we have in this case in most employers. I think the Bills are much further in control than they want to admit. And that's why a lot of those other pieces of the story are in the case. What the media covers is, you know, frankly, up to the media. But my case is about the control that the Bills exercise over these cheerleaders. And all of that is part of the control.
Could the Pegulas have come in and said, look, we didn't own the team when this was all happening. We're in charge now. We want to make it right. Let's sit down and fix it. Could they have done that?
They could have done it, and they still can.
Okay, and then
my clients remain interested in resolving the case. I think that's what happened in Oakland. I was optimistic would be, and it was an indication. I don't know if it is or is not yet, but I was optimistic that the NFL and the NFL owners were ready to put this chapter of not paying cheerleaders a lawful wage behind them. And it hasn't happened here yet in Buffalo, but the season just ended for the Bills, unfortunately, without a playoff appearance. But there is another opportunity now as they are in the off season. Maybe this is something they could take a look at and do the right thing and move past this.
And last question, if they don't, then what is the process? When do you expect this to be resolved? Take us a bit through that.
It's difficult to predict in terms of the timing, but what we're in is what's called the discovery phase, where we exchange documents. Eventually, deposition testimony will take place. I'm sure that there will be motion practice along the way. We also have currently pending a motion to add the NFL as a defendant. In our case, given the Roger Goodell's approval of the contract that uses this illegal cheerleading agreement, and the court hasn't ruled on that motion yet. That's awaiting a decision of whether or not we can amend to add the NFL.
But Roger Goodell has said he really didn't know anything about this.
That's correct. He submitted an affidavit in response to a subpoena served on him indicating that the signature on the contract was a rubber stamp affixed by someone who works for the NFL who reviewed it on his behalf.
Sean, thanks for taking the time, and you know, here's hoping this resolves well for all parties and we can all move forward, but I suppose we'll talk to you again when the time comes.
Looking forward to it, Evan. Thanks for the time.
That is Sean Cooney, an attorney representing the Buffalo Bills, Buffalo Jills, I should say, the Buffalo Jills in that lawsuit. He is out of Dolce Penapinto, which is a firm in Buffalo. In studio with me is Beth Cordello, who is a member of the law firm Polano & Farrow. She's chair of their employment practice group. And Connections listeners, I want to hear from you about something that I think I struggle with. Look, I'm a Cleveland Browns fan. I grew up in Cleveland. Most of my family's from Buffalo, Jamestown, Chautauqua. I grew up Browns and Bills fans. And I'm still a diehard football fan. And there are days where I don't want to be. I want to divorce myself from this because this kind of stuff really bothers me. I look at the Ray Rice case. I look at the concussion cases. I look at the Buffalo Jills cases. You've got cheerleaders making less than minimum wage, being told you've got to buy your own uniform and being objectified. And I'm not comfortable with it sometimes. I want to hear if you have sort of moved away from football as a result, or if you're kind of like me, that you want to break up and I don't know. You haven't yet. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Are you still with the Buffalo Bills? Beth, in this case, there's a lot of questions I have. Number one, could the Buffalo Bills and the NFL say, hey, we're in a free market economy. These positions are volunteer positions. We've created volunteer opportunities that you can be a cheerleader on the sidelines of NFL games if you choose. It's up to you. You don't have to. No one has to try out. It's going to be a volunteer. You're not going to be paid, or you'll be paid less than minimum wage. But that's the deal. And if you want to come out, go ahead and do it. Could they do that?
No, they couldn't do that. And we've seen that in other industries like the movie industry, magazines, other entertainment areas where you get these young kids out of college.
They're eager, yeah.
They're eager. They want to get good experience, be able to leverage that into paid work. And previously, these other industries have been able to say, this is an opportunity of a lifetime.
Right.
If you don't want to do it, there's 100 people behind you who will. But you're going to do the work for free in exchange for getting all this great exposure and experience. And the Department of Labor has said no. Unless the experience is solely for the education of that person, they must be paid for it. If you're deriving any benefit whatsoever, you have to pay for that work at least a rate of minimum wage. And I think that, and the NFL is going to see this as well. The various teams within the NFL, I think it's just been the industry standard that you pay sub-minimum wage or nothing at all. And it's a great opportunity. If you don't want to take it, there are many others who will. But they're going to see that, as with other industries, that's just not going to fly because you are deriving some benefit. And as in the case of some teams, substantial benefit from having a cheerleader squad, you have to pay them.
Okay. And so, in other words, if this goes all the way through, and Beth has said on this program before, employers and frankly people in suits want to settle. I mean,
right.
Dragging it out often it can be very difficult. But if it goes there, you think the Jills have a very solid case?
Absolutely,
it sounds like.
No doubt.
You
in
think
my mind.
They'll win?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And before I get to the phones, and the phones are lighting up here as we talk about what's going on here with the league and their legal issues, Jen on Twitter writes to us, it sounds like these outside events for cheerleaders are nothing short of sexual harassment. Beth, that's not part of this case. I've talked about how seedy it feels for me.
Right.
But it's, if you're advising these women, do you stick with wage theft? Is sexual harassment potentially part of that?
It's very case-by-case, factually intensive analysis. And that's the tough part of, what's expected of these cheerleaders. In my mind, it's similar to what you might see at a restaurant like Hooters, where the female employees are expected to dress in a certain way, entertain the customers mm-hmm. in a certain way. Or exotic dancers, and at what point does job responsibility become sexual harassment? And it depends individually on the complaints an individual employee might make and how you address it. For example, with these auctions, with sitting in somebody's lap in a golf cart, I don't think in this day and age that should be an auction just from a public image perspective. Never mind the legal implications, but if a cheerleader complains that she's not comfortable doing that, what would be the team's response? And how would that be handled? I haven't seen any cases like that
okay.
yet.
Okay. So that would we would learn more if we found out that the cheerleaders were actually complaining, saying they don't right. want to do it, and then did the bill say you have to?
Right.
That kind of a thing.
And it would also be interesting to see what policies, if any, are in place
yeah.
for the cheerleaders for these situations. Is there a mechanism in place that they can refuse these assignments? Or is it truly voluntary? And is there a complaint process set up for, when something bad happens on one of these fundraising events.
Okay. We have just about every phone line lit up.
Okay.
So let's get to the phones here. If you've got comments or questions, we're glad to have you. Bob in Brighton. Go ahead, Bob.
I'm just a fair weather fan living here, but I'm from Buffalo. And I just only pay attention to whether or not the Bills win or lose. And that's about it for me. But anyway, regarding the future of football, I think it's going to go the way of boxing. Little by little, football is just going to be inhabited by minorities and young people who want to get out of poverty. Those are going to be the guys going into this, just like the guys going into boxing. It's a desperate way out. anyone else who doesn't need that is going to be aware of the sacrifice to their body and brains. So they're not going to go into it. And the fans will realize this as they are more and more lately. Football is a dead end for the players, and it's too brutal.
Bob, thanks for the call, and I know Malcolm Gladwell has said the same kind of thing, that in 20, 30 years, we could see some serious changes with the way American football is viewed by the public. And Beth Cordello, he brings up a separate issue entirely, which is the way the league has handled these cases of concussions, the lawsuits, the way the players have gone. I mean, we could spend an hour on that, and in many ways, I'm sure we'll talk more on future programs about this, but just in terms of the way the league has handled those cases, has the league behaved appropriately with player health when it comes to brain issues?
Well, what I've seen is that perhaps the league has had information about long-term effects of head traumas and concussions that they haven't shared with their players. You know, some might argue that as a football player, you assume the risk of injury on the field. But when the information isn't made available that's known to the employer about the long-term effects, those aren't risks that they've necessarily assumed. And in my mind, it's very similar to what we've seen with asbestos litigation. Years ago, workers working with asbestos, the employers knowing more about the potential injury long-term that could be incurred by these employees but not sharing it. You know, they've been able to circumvent the workers' compensation laws and sue because they knew and didn't disclose that information.
So, in other words, it's one thing if nobody knows the potential risk, but if the employer is aware and withholds that information from an employee, they are in trouble down the road.
They can be. Yes.
Very different. Maxine in Rochester. Go ahead, Maxine.
Hi. I'm just trying to understand a little bit about the motivation of the women who are the Jills. Why are they doing this work? And I'm getting the idea that their situation is somewhat analogous to that of unpaid college interns, that they do this work, they don't get compensated for it, but there's some future reward for them. So that's my first kind of thing. And then my second is just kind of curiosity about, well, how are they support? They're actually, it sounds like they're actually paying to do the job because they're buying their uniforms and paying for their travel. So how are they supporting themselves? Who are these people? And what do they do later on? Why is it worth it to them to have those jobs?
Maxine, thank you for the call and the question. Beth touched on this a little bit earlier. I think the idea, the lure is, hey, you may not get paid now, but the exposure will be so great, the experience so great that it could lead to other things. Is that kind of why they may be lured into that job in the first place, Beth?
Oh, absolutely. It's, you know, it's a glamorous opportunity. You're on television. You have, you know, everything that goes with being able to call yourself an NFL cheerleader. And hopefully you can parlay that into, you know, other careers in entertainment and so forth.
Which is often bunk, by the way.
Exactly.
It's a nice idea.
It's a nice idea, but it doesn't often play out that way. And the fact of the matter is they're giving a benefit to the teams for their hard work, and they should be paid for it, regardless of, you know, how good the opportunity is or supposedly is.
Every phone line remains lit up. If you're there waiting, I promise we're coming to you. I just want to add one point to this, because to Maxine's question, there's a parallel in journalism. There are fewer journalism sites, organizations, publications that want to pay. And about 2 years ago, there was a veteran freelancer who had written about a number of foreign policy issues, North Korea, et cetera. He wrote a long piece on his own site about North Korean politics. And The Atlantic wrote to him and said, hey, we'd love to publish it. And he said, okay, what would you like to pay me? And they said, well, we can't pay you, but the exposure of The Atlantic Monthly could be so good. And he was furious. He published their emails publicly. He said, you're trying to undercut journalists who want to work, and this notion of, hey, give us your stuff for free and who knows where it goes. Right. He said that's basically bogus. But that world, those, you know, we're talking about the Buffalo Jills or journalism, those things are happening more often, Beth.
They are, but the Department of Labor is really cracked down on it in a number of industries, and they'll continue to do so. It's a model of employment that's outdated. And, you know, we need to move on. We need to pay people for their work.
Jake wants to know, what kind of damages and back wages would the Bills be looking at right now if they lose the case?
If they lose the case, certainly they owe. In New York, you can go back 6 years for what the Jills should have been paid for the hours that they worked. It sounds as though they didn't track time because they weren't paying for the time. And if that's the case, if they didn't track the time,
I suspect someone could probably put together some figures in about an hour.
Right. The presumption will go to what the Jills say they worked. And they can recover attorney's fees. And then there are other punitive damages that could occur as well if it's found to be knowing and egregious.
Well, we're talking potentially thousands of dollars, right?
Oh, it's hundreds of thousands.
What if it bankrupts this league? I mean, the league is barely getting by on the billions of dollars they're making. You know, that's the crazy thing to me.
Right.
Beth, you have said before, the Pegulas came in. They could have said, this wasn't our deal, but we're gonna try to fix this privately. If you're an attorney working with the Jills, or frankly, with your clients, again, Beth's an attorney for Polano & Farrow in Rochester. She's the chair of the Employment Practice Group. When you're working with your clients, the first goal is not to drag things out in a bloody way in a courtroom, right? I mean, you want to settle and solve it in other ways, don't you?
Right. Well, and given what the revenue the Bills drive annually and what it would cost to pay these cheerleaders, it's drops in a bucket. So it is a little bit of a mystery why they haven't done what the Raiders have done and just resolved it. Yeah, I think the minimum salary for an NFL player is $430,000 a year, and what it would cost to pay all the cheerleaders minimum wage for 1 year is $200,000, half of what you would pay for a minimum level player. It's 1/1,000th of their annual revenue. It's pennies to them.
Oh, and now for something completely different. John says this is just a hobby for these women. John, go ahead.
How did you guess? but Evan, I gotta say, the Buffalo Bills, I'm a huge Bills fan, and I was offended by the lawsuit. But I do agree that under the current law, which I disagree with, the Bills will have to pay up. I'm sure that's the case. I knew a cheerleader, Buffalo Bills cheerleader, back in the early 70s, and she was just unbelievably honored to be a Buffalo Jill. And I think at that time they may have gotten a ticket to get into the game, in addition to them getting into the game. And they were fine with that.
John, I am honored to work for WXXI.
And I'll tell you, I've done things in my life where I volunteered for my sake to get more experience in various things that I've done in my life. And I'll tell you, to take that away from these future people that love the Buffalo Bills and are honored by it, I think is a crime in itself.
Who are we taking it away from? If these women get paid, who loses an opportunity in the future?
Well, people, number one, do you see the Buffalo Bills on the field, Buffalo Jills on the field right now?
No, because they were eliminated this year because they had to handle this issue.
That's happiness that some of these ladies will have in the future. And I'll tell you, I would like to volunteer to be one of those, after a touchdown is scored, there are a couple guys that always run back and forth with these flagpoles. I'd like to do that for free. Volunteer, I'd be honored. And what's the price of being on the field? What price do you put on a ticket to be on the field? I pay a couple $100 a game, to be honest with you, to be able to stand in the sideline.
All right.
That in itself has some economic benefit.
John, thanks for the call. A couple of things here. First of all, you've built this big old straw man that you're attacking with this notion that there will be no Buffalo Jills in the future if the Bills have to pay these women. Not true. This year they were off the field because they're handling a legal matter. I suspect, Beth Cordello, they could be back. I mean, there's no reason they couldn't be back. But let's handle this from a different way. If John and the people who are concerned with the law, the minimum wage law, were successful and this were overturned, what would the potential impact be on workers outside of the Buffalo Jills? If this minimum wage law doesn't exist, and give me a sense for what the landscape would look like employment-wise.
I just can't imagine that if the court were to resolve this, that it would not be resolved in the Jills' favor. It's such a plain violation of the statute. And it's interesting because some of the most vocal opponents of the Jills lawsuit have been former Jills themselves.
That's right.
Saying exactly what he's
saying.
Exactly
what John said.
It's so offensive. Such a great opportunity. You're there at the game. You're cheering. It's a great thing. Nobody else there at the game is being asked to be there unpaid other than the fans. And these women aren't there as fans. They're there working. But the law is plain. It doesn't matter how great the experience is, how great the opportunity is. You're there under strict control. The bills tell you, you know, your mandatory practice, mandatory look, mandatory weight, mandatory fundraising, etc.
Mandatory jiggle test.
Yeah. This does not say volunteer opportunity to me.
Yeah, I understand. All right, here's what we have to do. If you're waiting on the phone, we're coming to you next. We're taking a short break. We're going to come back more with Beth Cordello. Toby Motika from 13 Wham Sports will join us, and we're going to talk about the impact or not of these lawsuits and these legal issues. And I've said it myself. I'm an NFL fan, and there are times where it turns my stomach a bit, and I sort of wish I could step back, and maybe I will. More of your comments and calls and their commentary next on Member-Supported Public Radio. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Again, if you're on the phone, we've got some great comments. I can see them loading up on the board, and we will get to those in a moment. I want to welcome Toby Motika, 13 Wham Sports anchor. How are you, Toby?
I'm excellent. Thank you for having me here today.
Well, Toby, we've been talking about the Bills, the NFL, these legal issues this year, but so far, it doesn't look like it's impacting the league's bottom line ticket sales or ratings.
No, it doesn't. I mean, look at Wild Card Weekend just now. The national ratings for those games were massive.
And those were, apart from the last game, three of the four were some of the most boring football games
awful.
I've ever watched.
They were terrible. Yeah. You practically had to torture yourself to sit there and watch it without taking a break. And so you look at it, people are just, right now, almost, it feels like, expect to watch football at certain times, and that's what we're going to do, whether we're actually enjoying ourselves or not. And I'm with you. I'm a huge football fan. Massive. But I also sometimes wonder, what is it going to take to actually get me to change the channel and watch something else?
Well, and by the way, just as a protocol for the show, we don't say torture, we say enhanced interrogation technique.
Fair enough. I apologize.
Tell me, when it comes to the Bills themselves, no blackouts this year.
No.
Sellouts.
No, exactly. That's just it. The attendance at the Buffalo Bills games was better than it's been in years. And you can chalk that up to whatever you want. Winning helps. You know, this Bills team went 500 for the first time in a decade. And that is what really is going to keep people coming back to these games. You look in places like Jacksonville, they're struggling. In San Diego, even, they can struggle. That stadium is a problem. But it doesn't seem like PR nightmares and these public issues that the NFL has had are affecting the way people perceive the league at all. You might say it is, but when it actually comes down to it, you put your favorite jersey on Sunday and you start screaming at your television.
Right, and Roger Goodell does not seem popular.
No.
But a lot of people said he'd be out of a job before the end of the season. He's not.
Nope.
And his bosses are the owners, and he's making them a lot of money,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. As long as he keeps making the owners money, unless this starts leaking down towards them and people start viewing the owners in this negative light, and then they really start going, hey, you know, this isn't us, this is on the commissioner, then they might start pointing to the commissioner as the problem. But so long as the commission is making these guys money, I think the owners are going to sit back, try to let things blow over, and watch the seats get full.
Interesting. So he's not only making them money, he's deflecting a lot of the blame they might receive towards
sure
him.
Sure seems so, like it, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, interesting. And Beth Cordello, in Roger Goodell's case with the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Jills, there was this question of a contract and who's in charge. Roger Goodell's name, his signature, appears on it, and he has said in a signed affidavit, well, that was just a rubber stamp, that I didn't even see that contract. I wasn't aware of what the situation was with the Buffalo Jills. As someone who's worked in employment law, does that fly with you?
It never flies. As the commissioner of the organization, as would be with the CEO of a business, when you're the highest level person, you can't disclaim responsibility for your name on a contract. And it was another squandered opportunity for him to accept responsibility and perhaps encourage the teams to do the right thing.
Would any court say, oh, well, he says it was just a rubber stamp, he didn't know about it, therefore that's good enough?
No. No, that would never happen, and I'm surprised that was his response.
Is he just getting terrible legal advice all year? What's happening?
I don't know. His response every step of the way, whether it's Ray Rice and the personal conduct off the field, it's exactly what not to do when, you know, your company is handling a high-profile misconduct issue.
All right, last question for Beth before we jump back to the phones, and we'll kick it around our panel with our listener questions. What is the main lesson for employers generally, looking at the way the league has handled it, right, their CEO or their man in charge, Roger Goodell, what would you say to employers to say, look, this is a popular league and yeah, they're making a lot of money, but here are the lessons from the last year?
The lessons are, you know, inconsistent policies. And when you discipline employees, you know, for the domestic violence issues have been addressed in a more lenient fashion than other violations with, you know, drug use or, you know, pre-touchdown celebrations, this sort of thing. And then when you're all over the place, when a certain issue comes up, you're leaving yourself open to this sort of bad publicity and to lawsuits. So it's, you know, you have to have a consistent policy that you follow every time.
And if you make a mistake, own it.
Well, listen, if it's a good faith mistake, there's nothing wrong with going back and fixing a mistake. It's unfortunate, especially with Ray Rice, the mistake doesn't look like it was a good faith mistake.
Yeah.
And, you know, and there's, at best, they didn't thoroughly investigate the matter. At worst, they did, but didn't meet out the right punishment in the hopes that no one would know. And either way, it was flubbed.
But look at the good faith. The Pegulas could have come in with the Jills and said, clean break here. We're the new owners. We're going to fix this. And they haven't yet.
It would have been a great opportunity for them. They could have even said, you know, listen, we're not going to admit liability for past conduct. We're going to play out that case. But, you know, we love the Jills. We know our fans love the Jills. We want to pay the Jills going forward.
Boy.
That would have been a great opportunity.
And maybe they still will. I mean, we'll see. All right, back to the phone. Sarah in Brockport. Go ahead, Sarah.
Oh, hi. Hi. I think this is a great topic, and I think that the Jills should be paid. And I'm wondering if part of it happens to a lot of artists, people in entertainment or, say, even paint. Like, I'm a painter, and we get asked all the time to donate things for fundraisers. And the fundraising people make all kinds of money. And then the little people at the bottom making all of the stuff, we give it all over thinking, oh, we're told we're going to get exposure. And it's a weird problem in the whole industry. And one thing I noticed, though, about the Jills is nobody would be upset with a Jill if she didn't participate. Whereas sometimes some of these fundraisers, if you choose not to participate, people think, well, why aren't you? And they're disappointed in you.
Sarah, that's a great question, because we've been talking about that exposure issue. Is art different there, Beth? I mean, you know, I certainly respect what Sarah does, but I know there are people who say, look, I can't pay for your art, but we'll hang it here and the exposure could be great for you, in similar ways that we've been talking about.
Well, it's interesting. And in the fundraising context, you know, it's for charity and this and that and the other. But, you know, I know that's frustrating for a lot of artists, whether they're musicians or painters, et cetera. They're constantly being asked to donate their services for free, and they have difficulty in making a living. But, you know, in the employment context, if you're commissioned by a painter and you exert a certain amount of control over what the piece will be, etc., you know, I think that they should be paid for that time.
If you want to join the conversation, you may have a hard time getting through on the phone lines. They're packed. Beth Cordello is here. She is a member of Polano and Farrell Law Firm in Rochester. She's chair of the Employment Practice Group there. Toby Motika, 13 WHAM Sports anchor, is also with us as we talk about the Bills, the Jills, the NFL, the Rices, and the year in what not to do legally, we'll put it that way. Keith, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
I have an interesting show. I've got a comment and a question. People, when they say the NFL, essentially the NFL is basically 31 old white guys. I mean, they make the decision amongst themselves and filter it down to Roger Goodell and everybody else. The other thing is the attorney mentioned about volunteering. How would you look at the instance where you have volunteer, let's say, firemen who volunteer their time and energy at a firehouse where they actually have paid staff working also? Now, the volunteers do the exact same thing as the paid, but the only difference is they volunteer their time with no compensation. Have to do the same training, the same job, et cetera, et cetera, sometimes even more.
That's actually a very special group, and there are actually a special set of laws that apply to volunteer firefighters, and they do, while they might not necessarily draw a wage, they get certain compensation and benefits, but you've actually identified a very particular group that has its own set of laws through the municipality that they work for.
Interesting. Keith, thanks for the call, Keith, and it was a good point, but interesting
right.
that they are governed by a separate set of laws. Here's a comment on Twitter from Marco. Here's a fan's perspective, and we'll see what Toby says. Marco says, I'm a diehard Bills fan. I love and support the team, but I fully support the Jills lawsuit. They deserve to be paid and the Bills held accountable. Evan, like you, I'm troubled by the NFL issues, but I love the sport in and of itself, and I don't think boycotting is the answer. More activism is the answer. What do you think, Toby?
I think that's a very common fan perspective. I really do. Where I think that the Jills have run into a problem in terms of the perception of this whole case at times has been if you go to the stadium, and I bet if you talk to the 70,000 or so fans that are at the stadium, and you on the spot say, Jill's lawsuit, what do you think? Is it affecting your enjoyment of the game, enjoyment of the team? I bet you they're just going to say, go Buffalo! Woo!
Right.
Along those lines. Whereas fans, when they actually sit down, have time to look at the facts and look at what's happening and see the case laid out, that's the logical reaction. And that really is. I mean, I myself was kind of, when you read the New York Times article that you shared with me, you go, whoa, really? This is serious stuff here. But I just like him, I think most people are just too in love right now with the sport of football, with their team. They've spent too much time, you know, just sweating on Sundays, rooting for their team to win, that I don't think something like this or anything that has happened so far this year is going to be what helps people give up the NFL at all. I think what's going to affect the sport more down the line is if parents keep telling their kids, you're not playing football. But that's a topic for an entirely different day.
Yeah, and it's interesting. We know sex sells and violence sells, and the NFL wants women fans. They want female fans, but this has been a year where you wonder if they're going to start to really lose them in larger numbers. And this is Charlotte in Fairport. Go ahead, Charlotte.
Hey, just wanted to say I think you're doing a fantastic job with Connections, Evan.
Oh,
love
thank
it.
You, thank you.
And just a quick question: is there a parallel of any kind between Katy Perry's performing free in the Super Bowl with the Jill situation?
So Katy Perry was not paid, in other words, is that right?
That's my understanding.
Toby?
I think Katy Perry herself is. I think the Bills, the NFL was tossing around the idea of making the artist who was performing at the Super Bowl halftime show actually pay the NFL to do so because of the exposure it gives them. I think Katy Perry, because of the massive star power she already has, may have gotten around that. But I really don't know. But it is actually something that the NFL tossed around. You pay us to perform at halftime and watch your sales explode like they did for Bruno Mars.
Well, let's ask the expert. The attorney is Beth Cordello. I'm not too worried about Katy Perry's
right.
bottom line, but at the same time, does that fly? Can the league say you got to pay us to perform?
You know, in the typical employment context, no, that wouldn't fly. When you're talking about these superstars who already are millionaires many times over, you know, you wouldn't probably see a legal action by Katy Perry for the, you know, few hours of her time to perform at the Super Bowl. And it's just a bigger context of the issue we've been discussing with the Jills. You know, can you get around the wage laws by saying this is such a fantastic opportunity, such great exposure? And no, there are no regulations that carve out for that.
All right, Charlotte, great question and very interesting. But again, we're not shedding too many tears for Katy Perry. let's get to Drew in Rochester, who wants to talk about nonprofit and whether that impacts it. Go ahead, Drew.
Hi, thanks for letting me talk or ask a question.
Sure.
The attorney that's there, can she explain to us why the politicians in the government has allowed the NFL to have a non-for-profit status in this country, and maybe that may have something to do with the Jills not being paid, or, I mean, I'm just curious about that. Can your attorney answer that question?
The NFL is technically a non-profit. And and Beth, I think he...
Right. Well, the cheerleaders work for the teams, not for the NFL itself, but they work for the actual teams. There are certain not-for-profits do have more lenient rules when it comes to volunteer workers, but you have to show that you're carrying out the philanthropic mission of the organization. You know, in this case, you know,
sure,
the cheerleaders are actually, you know, adding to the marketing of the team, and it's shown that they increased revenue. They're going to fundraisers. They're actually buying the calendars themselves and having to sell them. You know, so I think in the context of the cheerleaders, even then, under the more lenient rules that would apply for not-for-profits, they're not volunteers.
That answer your question, Drew?
Well, somewhat. I mean, they should get paid anyway, but my thing is, why are they considered non-profit, the NFL itself, not the Bills? I know we're talking about the Bills and the Jills, but the NFL in itself is considered, has not-for-profit status in America, and
yeah.
I don't understand that. And they get billions of dollars from TV revenues and things like that. I'm just wondering why we have allowed that to happen. You know, they bully cities and make them pay for their stadiums and things like that, and no one's really saying much about that.
Drew, thanks.
They just get away with a lot of stuff, that's all.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Drew. I think people see that Roger Goodell made $44 million last year, and they say, but it's a nonprofit. Beth, I think that trips some people up.
It does, and you know, I'm not privy to how they attained a not-for-profit status, but just because you're not-for-profit doesn't mean that
you're not making money.
You're not making money. We've certainly seen that with a lot of larger not-for-profit organizations.
Yeah, I mean, shareholders are not supposed to be making money, but there's plenty of stakeholders in the NFL
right.
who make a lot of money.
Right.
Interesting there. Let me see if I can get through a couple more here. This is Caleb in Pittsburgh. Go ahead, Caleb.
Hi. 20 years ago, I was talking to a friend. I lived in Boston, and his nephew was the ball boy for the Boston Red Sox. And my jaw was dropped open because of the tens of thousands of dollars this kid made. And they might have been in tips, and I don't know if the Jills received tips. But still, that wage is outrageous. And to me, I just think, you know, everybody thinks the ball boy is cute and great and it brings it up. I think it's a women issue, and that women are always paid less. And it appalls me to hear that they're paid that poorly. And so I think, and it sounds like similar to from most of the callers, the court of public opinion is going to make this case not even go to trial. What do you think?
I think it's bad for their public image, certainly. And I hope the Bills between now and the next season, you know, sit down with the Jills and work out an arrangement so this can be put behind them.
Our crack staff behind the glass gets me this from Billboard magazine and confirms Toby Motika's account here. The halftime show is one of the world's most watched musical events. Its performers typically enjoy a sudden spike in sales from the exposure. The NFL, however, doesn't usually pay its Super Bowl artists. The league has even pitched a pay-to-play suggestion. Just don't expect Katy Perry to play ball with that. But yeah, so the league is always aggressively, it seems, trying to pay people the least amount it possibly can. I think that's the one thing I'm seeing.
It really is wild when you see how much money that the NFL is taking in, that it feels like at times they're scraping pennies off the mat.
Yeah.
When it comes to dealing with things like the lawsuits, the Bills dealing with the Jills lawsuit, and things like the halftime show. There is going to be so much money generated from these things. At times, you wonder how much it's actually worth it to try to reach into your car seat cushions and see what else you can find.
All right, last quick call. This is Robert. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, I don't know why people aren't more upset about what's happening in Congress on this. You go down to the Rayburn Building down in Washington to Louise Slaughter's office, and it's chock full of unpaid interns that. You know, they're coming off of a $60,000 a year education. They're not making a living wage or anything working in a congressional office. And I just don't understand why there's all this concern about cheerleaders not being paid when we have interns in Washington, D.C. that are earning nothing.
Robert, thanks for the call. I don't think that we're not concerned about interns. I think we're just looking at one thing and maybe not the other. But I know there's been movement on paying interns more in recent years as well, right?
There's been a huge movement on behalf of the government and the plaintiff's bar to eliminate volunteer work unless it's truly just for the educational benefit of the individual.
And also, it goes back to the caller you had before the break. I think that we'll start talking more about interns in Congress when the interns in Congress file a suit and start making a big deal about these things publicly and really form together like the Jills have. The caller before the break, I can't remember his name anymore, saying previous Jills had, you know, were honored to do this. Well, these ones are not. And these ones are trying to change things moving forward.
Or not honored enough to accept a work situation that might even be illegal. Last comment comes in from Twitter. Evan, listening to the show and wondering why people are comparing the Jills to interns. These women are the top athletes in their field. Pay them. Beth Cordello?
Absolutely agree.
Beth says they're going to get paid one way or another, and we'll see if the Bills can settle it before it goes forward in the courtroom. Beth Cordello, where can they find you at Polano & Farrow? Online?
Absolutely, at lawpf.com.
All right, and Toby Motika, we can see you on 13 Wham Sports.
Why not? And check it out on Twitter.
With regularity. You are on Twitter as well. Where are you on Twitter?
At my name, Toby Motika, M-O-T-Y-K-A.
Always good to see you, my friend.
Thank you for being here.
Beth, great stuff. Thanks for answering all of our many listener questions.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening. Short break, and we're talking TEDx, a new series coming to Rochester next. Stay with us.